This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Robert Wilkie was appointed as the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs last July. Wilkie grew up at Fort Bragg in a military family and still serves as an officer in the Air Force Reserve. As Secretary of the Cabinet-level department, he is responsible for ensuring the VA serves veterans' physical, mental, and emotional needs to the best of its ability.
It is also a department that has seen its share of controversy over the years, including here in Wisconsin at the Tomah VA Medical Center. That was the center which was embroiled in a scandal a few years ago that involved overprescription of opioid narcotics. But Wisconsin is also at the cutting edge of research into spinal cord injuries, such as those sustained in combat. Speaking by phone from his office in Washington, Wilkie talked about what the department learned from what happened in Tomah and the changes that he says have taken place.
Bonnie, the most important lesson from Tomah was that it forced on VA a cultural change. And let me describe that, and I'm speaking to someone with military experience, and military experience in an era in which my father was serving. He retired in the mid to late 1980s, so you are of his world. And when I talk about the cultural change, if you would have told my father after 30 years of service, terrible wounds from Vietnam, jumping out of airplanes as a senior officer in the 82nd Airborne Division, that we would treat his pain not with opioids, but with Tai Chi or yoga, or music therapy, my nose would have been flat against my face because that was not part of the ethos. What Tomah forced us to do was two things. One, to focus on the pain. And I don't mean to make cheap rhymes, but I've said before, I've said it under oath, focus on the pain and not the brain. By getting to the muscle, the bone, manipulating it, offering alternatives to opioid therapy. The next thing that it did was it forced us to relook at how we prescribe medicine. And after a year or so of research, it was pretty clear that a combination of ibuprofen and aspirin, or acetaminophen and aspirin, work just as well as the opioids without the debilitative effects on the brain. So as a result of Tomah, we've reduced the rate of prescriptions for opioids for veterans by 51%, and we are the leaders in alternative therapies. So that is what that terrible thing led the entire department to do. And, you know, out of the pain came great gain, and now we are the leader in trying to turn the corner for the entire nation on opioid issues.
Well, on the best side, the Zablocki VA here in Milwaukee is home to probably one of the most state-of-the-art spinal cord injury centers in the country. And
absolutely,
things like exoskeletons are being created. People are actually using them in real-world situations. And so what is being done to make sure that all veterans across the country have access to this kind of cutting-edge medical care?
Well, the good thing is that we are the leader in spinal cord research. We are the leader in spinal cord therapies, and we have centers of excellence across the country. The kinds of things that you're talking about are available in hubs like Milwaukee, Tampa, Denver, large centers like that serving large communities and communities where our veterans go after they leave the service. Wisconsin is one of those places where you don't have to explain service to a lot of people in Wisconsin. And what has been done at Zablocki is because of the dedication of the folks there, it has become one of our hubs. Spinal cord injury is what we do better than anyone, to the point where if you go to Zablocki's sister institution, Healy in Tampa, Healy's tied into Special Operations Command at MacDill Air Force Base, and we are tied at the hip with our special operators because we are ahead of where everyday medicine is when it comes to spinal cord. So when I look at Wisconsin, I look at the prospects that the Veterans Department has to adapt and overcome problems, which we saw in Toma, and an adaptation that transformed care in the entire country. And then with spinal cord injury, taking care of the most devastating effects of the battlefield, the kinds of wounds you see being treated at Tsablaki are wounds that in my father's day in Southeast Asia would have led to death. And our mission is to make life bearable for our veterans who have suffered these terrible, terrible wounds.
Well, one of the things, of course, that comes out of wounds like that and combat situations are the high rate of suicide and homelessness and addiction and all of those related things. It's disproportionately high in the U.S. veteran population.
Yes.
And I know the VA has some things going on to address this. What is happening right now to help with that?
Well, you just hit on something that I've been talking to members of Congress about, that we're talking about a continuum of effect. Opioid abuse, homelessness, suicide is on that continuum, and we just can't treat one of those things in isolation. So a few weeks ago, the president launched a nationwide effort to tackle suicide, and that is with me in the lead as the representative of this department. But it also brings in the Department of Defense, the National Institutes of Health, HHS. So it is not simply a whole of government effort, but a whole of nation effort. We need new approaches with the cognitive sciences. We need new approaches when it comes to relationships with our states and localities, and I'll tell you what I mean. I was just up in Alaska at the end of last year. Over 50% of the veterans in the state of Alaska have no contact with VA. So I asked the Federation of Natives to double the number of their VA tribal representatives to help us find those veterans out in the community. But when I talk about suicide, we have to talk about a national issue. New York Times did a magnificent piece that came out today that points to a problem that we're seeing in places as diverse as Cleveland and Herman, Utah, that just did a massive piece in the Washington Post that in one small town in Utah, six high school students have taken their lives in the last year. Well, we had 19 veterans take their lives on VA property last year across the country. And in this one town in Utah, six teenagers have died at their own hands. That points to a response that has to be complete, and it has to be government-wide. What I see coming out of this task force is a refocus of government cooperation with the states and localities. That also applies to homelessness. It's not as much of a problem in Wisconsin. Your state government, local governments have done a pretty good job in finding those veterans. But you look at a place like Los Angeles or Seattle, where you have tens of thousands who are on the streets. And in fact, the majority of those veterans who are homeless reside in that corridor that exists from Los Angeles up to Seattle. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't have much of a problem in the rest of the country. I mean, we've had massive cities, Jacksonville, Florida, New Orleans, Dallas, have eliminated veterans' homelessness by cooperating with VA and with charities, Catholic charities, local charities like that. So I am glad that the president has forced the federal government to come together. And what I do see is a national research strategy, a public health roadmap, and grants to local and state governments and NGOs.
That leads me to a question about privatization.
Yes.
Because there's certainly been talk about that.
Yeah.
And I believe that the armed services are a function of the government, which means they're a function of and for the people.
Yeah, we are part of the national security continuum.
Right. So do we as a nation abdicate our responsibility to our veterans once they leave the service by refusing to directly take care of them, to directly
yeah.
pay for their care?
Yeah. So let me talk about what this isn't. And I've been very vocal about the privatization issue because I think if you look at my presentation to the Congress in the last 2 weeks when I presented a $220 billion budget to the Congress, if people are talking about privatization, you're not going about it in the right way then. So let me tell you what this isn't. This is not libertarian VA. This is not me giving you a card marked veteran, and you can go out into the private sector and get any care that you desire. What the Mission Act tells me, and it is in law, is that I have the authority to give a veteran an option to go in the private sector if the Department of Veterans Affairs cannot provide that veteran with service she needs. And again, it's only an option. The other side of this coin, and I have been shouting this from the housetops, our veterans are voting with their feet. We've seen a reduction in the last few years of the number of veterans going out into the private sector. And we have to remember that since Omar Bradley was the head of the Veterans Administration after World War II, about 30% of all VA care is in the private sector, or we buy care from Department of Defense or the Indian Health Service. We do about $1 billion worth of care with those two. We're seeing veteran participation in the private sector go down because if you read the annals of internal medicine, it will say that VA health care, which you pointed out at the beginning of this interview, is as good or better than any care in any section of the country. And I intend in the time that I'm privileged to sit in General Bradley's desk, which is where I am today, that I'm going to do my best to make sure that VA is the best health care option for our veterans and that this is the place that they turn to. Right now, about 9 million of our 20 million veterans use VA. There are many reasons why people don't. But I will also say that you implied it at an earlier stage in the discussion. Of the veterans who commit suicide, 14 of them we've never contacted. We've never met. And we have to double our efforts to get out in the community and find those veterans who are not part of our system. The most recent veteran suicide is another variation of that theme. I believe it was in Austin. The veteran discharged himself from the hospital against the wishes of the medical professionals there and took his life the next day. Some of these things we will never be able to stop. The majority of veterans who take their lives are from the Vietnam era. So some of them have had problems that began to build when Lyndon Johnson was president. But my goal, my mission, is to make the department as good as it can be and to provide those comprehensive services to push down those suicide numbers and those homeless numbers.
One of the things that's changed since Lyndon Johnson's era and the Vietnam era is that women have become much more active in the armed services and therefore have become a much larger veterans population.
Yes.
Sexual trauma and the PTSD from that is still far too prevalent in the services. In what way has the Me Too movement made its way into the VA and the veterans community?
Well, I think the changes, the cultural changes, started long before the Me Too movement. Let me give you a historic example. My father was commissioned 2 months before John Kennedy was inaugurated. In his day, less than 1% of the force was female. Before I came to this job, I was the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, working for General Mattis. 17% of the force that I oversaw was female. In my youth, you would have never thought to see an American woman wearing the Red Beret of the 82nd Airborne Division And today, it's common to see American women as part of the All-American Division, America's most decorated combat unit. For VA, that means 10% of our population is now female. Last year, 10% of the monies that we spent on veterans' health, we spent about $91 billion. $9.2 billion was spent on women's health. We have women's clinics in almost all of our major centers. And as for military sexual trauma, one of the things that I've done here is that I've ordered our legal and benefits people to go back and review, with the help of the Department of Defense, all cases that had been filed with a complaint of military sexual trauma in that veteran's life, so that we can take a brand new look at what some of our female veterans have had to endure. The other thing that we do is that, unlike the private sector, we have same-day mental health services. Even for those who are other than honorably discharged, we have opened the aperture on mental health conditions, and that includes all forms of trauma as well. I've said, and I was quoted in the New York Times today as saying, that we haven't even reached the Sputnik stage when it comes to mental health. We haven't even begun to get our arms around the brain. But I can tell you that it is not your daddy's VA anymore. It's a new day. But that reflects the change in the military culture.
How do you advocate for the healthy growth in the VA, doing all of these very needed services and very welcome services in the veterans community? But how do you do that while also being a good steward of taxpayer dollars?
Yeah, well, the good thing is that I have a lot of people watching and helping. I probably have more congressional hearings than any of my colleagues, with the possible exception of the Secretary of Defense. So I am up there constantly. While we are doing these medical transformations and these cultural transformations, we are also embarked on the most aggressive, transformative period in the history of the department, meaning we're putting in new and efficient HR systems. We're putting in new business transformation systems. I'm putting in an electronic health record. When you entered the military and you went to that military entrance processing station, as I did many years ago, we had a record that began to be built there. Well, it was a paper record. And when it came time for, I'm still in the reserve, so I'm not in veteran status. When it came time for you to go to VA, you had a paper record. It wasn't interoperable. What we're working on now is the building of an electronic health record that starts when a young American enters service, and that is handed over to VA when that veteran, when that soldier, sailor, airman, marine achieves veteran status, and is interoperable with both DOD, VA, as well as the private sector. So we are doing those things to ensure that every available dollar is spent on health care and it's spent efficiently.
Mr. Secretary, would it be your hope that every veteran would be in the VA system?
Well, I don't know about that. I want them to choose VA, and I think we can give them an example, because there's certain qualifications that people have to meet, and if they don't meet them, I mean, because they're too rich, for instance. But I want it to be an option that every veteran is told about and every veteran feels comfortable pursuing. About half of our veterans don't come to VA. They have private health insurance. They're fine doing that. In fact, 80% of all the veterans who come to us actually have other forms of insurance. So they're not in VA for everything that they need. But I do want them to know that the door is open when they need us to be there. That's one of the things that's hard to explain. My father was in and out of VA, but he also had TRICARE as a result of his many years of service. So my goal is to make sure that we're the best healthcare system and that we're attractive to every veteran, and that is a choice that every veteran considers.
Here, sitting in mid-April of 2019, for you, what is the VA at its best?
The VA at its best is a cultural, it's a cultural mission. It is a place where a United States veteran can come and meet people and work with people who understand the language of service and the culture of the military. It is unique. I want veterans to be able to sit in a room or talk to people who know exactly what they have been through, something that they cannot get anyplace else in the country. That is why I want this to be welcoming. I want it to be efficient. I want it to be modern. And I want it to be someplace that veterans are proud to come and visit.
Robert Wilkie is the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. He spoke to us from his office in Washington. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.